Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Final Four coming up this weekend. Women's Final Four starts tomorrow. Men's Final Four over the weekend into Monday. Basketball season will plateau. Tom Crean, former coach at Georgia, Indiana, Marquette, took Marquette to the 2003 NCAA Final Four. I covered that tournament. It's fantastic to see the Marquette fans showing up. It's part of the beauty of March Madness. You get to know some teams, programs, coaches that you may not have seen before. Tom Crean's been there. What is it like to be at a Final Four? How do you prepare your team? Is there an advantage for UConn, given that some of these players and coaches obviously were there a year ago? Tom Crean joining us to talk about the Final Four. How you doing, Coach?
I'm good, John. Good to be with you.
Will you be on site in Arizona for the Final Four, or how are you covering it?
No, I don't have any responsibilities with ESPN One. Not there. This is actually going to be a weekend that I have an 18-year-old daughter, and we got to make a couple final looks at for her college choices. So unless something changes drastically, I'll be traveling with her and looking forward to that. I got to do a lot of it in the summer with her, and haven't had a chance to do it lately. So we'll get a chance to do that. My wife Joni, my daughter, and myself will get to do that this weekend.
Oh, that's very cool. I love that. And I want to circle back to that because I went through that a couple years ago, and I know some of our listeners are probably thinking about colleges for their kids as well. I'd love to see, you know, kind of what your mindset is as you approach that. But let's start with the Final Four. You've been on that stage. Give us an idea of what these teams and these coaching staffs are going through right now as this tournament starts to get real.
Well, I think the fact that it's in Glendale helps some. When I was there, we were in New Orleans, and we were right downtown. Near Bourbon Street. We are right in the heart of the French Quarter. And I think that's cool. That's great. But so is everybody else down there. And and the bottom line is our team handled it really well, I think. From everything I've gathered, they handled it really well. But there's so much attention being paid to it. And I think the fact now that it's out a little bit, you can travel. I think the thing the NCAA did a few years back, which has just been so big, is they allow the teams the opportunity to practice in there on Thursday, and it's closed. I don't know if the broadcasters get to be in or not, but it's closed. You do some media, but you get that feel on the court, because when you go in there on Friday, that's really your time, but that's open to the public, and that is more of a spectacle. That's something like, that's a moment, that's a bucket list moment for everybody when you're in there. So when you get a chance to go in there and work, I think that really is beneficial. I think there's two ways to look at it. Like UConn going in late last night to be in there for today, staying at home a little bit longer because they've been there, done that. They understand it. It's smart. But at the same time, I saw Alabama practiced at Grand Canyon yesterday. That's smart too. I mean, so there's really not a bad way to do it as long as your team can do everything that they can do to stay in character, to stay focused, to not get overly distracted with, you're going to get distracted with all the hype. But you can't get distracted into thinking that you've got to play a different way or that you've got to coach a different way. And the lights are never brighter. And the one thing you cannot have is stage fright, which puts you into a point where you don't play as relaxed as you need to be, or you play so tight because you're trying to prove if you're at the Final Four, you've already proven that you can really play. And the bottom line is to go out there and play that way. And I think that's really, really key, because what happens is you get tight and you start short-arming shots and you start missing short, and all of a sudden that fast break happens. And a little bit of that is what happened to us in 2003. We missed a ton of really close 2 foot, 3 foot, 1 foot shots, which allowed Kansas to get out on that break. We thought we were fast and we thought we'd seen speed, but we had not seen that speed that Kansas had brought. So you got to make shots so you can set your defense. There's a lot of things that go into that, but you just want to stay in character as best you possibly can.
Stay in character. I love that. When you're approaching it from a coaching standpoint, you know, there's an abundance of film. You can see anything you want to see, and maybe there's too much out there. How much is enough, coach, where, you know, you want to be prepared, but you don't want to overdo it?
Well, I think it's three-pronged. It really is. There's film, and there's two parts of that. There's the part where you're showing edits of what you want them to grasp, and part of those edits are the personnel tapes of the individual players, but you also want them to see flow. And that flow is not only the other team. You want your team to see your flow. You want to remind your team what you do well, but you also want to remind your team of what you can't do in this game. And then I think there's the walkthrough in the ballrooms, in the hotels. I think those are incredibly important. And you're moving, you know, you can be in your gym shoes or not. I don't know if that's important. What's important is you're talking. You're talking the game. And I think the more you get your team talking the game, talking the coverages, talking out loud, and I don't mean whispering and mumbling, but I mean game voice, like really, really talking it is really important. And then you have your court action. And I think it's important that you get on the court and that you break a sweat, that you go through some things. It doesn't have to be overly live, but it's not all walkthrough because you want your team comfortable in that environment. And it's as much important to go through that in a good way in the arena as it is whatever practice gym you use. I think that is crucial that you get into that environment where you feel very, very comfortable in the court that you're going to play on.
UConn looks fantastic. And I think a lot of credit to that coaching staff and the program and the culture they've built there. But what do you see on the court? What are they doing to other teams right now?
They pass the ball as good as anyone, probably as good as anyone in the country. And the other thing they do is they've got Donovan Clingan, and they've got a tremendous backup in Samson Johnson. They can play through Clingan, but more importantly than what they can do with him offensively, he just changes the entire game when he's on the court defensively. And he can block shots. He can alter shots. But most importantly, he's in the way of the rim. So, like, when you think you have an open layup, and this is going to be huge against Alabama because Alabama shoots threes really well. But the reason they shoot threes so well is because they get layups. And they had 16 threes the other day, but their layup game is really, really strong. It's really important. And so those are going to be few and far between in a half-court situation. Like, they've really got to run in this game if they're going to be successful because the rim is going to be covered. And then with the passing, the movement is constant. And Donovan Clingan has improved so much that he can post up, he can get behind the defense, they can play pick and roll. But what they are as well is they are a great screening team. And when I say sometimes the screens are real screens, but sometimes the screens look like they're screens and they're slips, and you think it's going to be a screen, like there's no wasted motion. So they have a really good game of deception as well. But I think the fact that they've improved as much as they have throughout the year, that guys like Stephon Castle has improved the way that he has, I think that's incredibly good. And at the end of the day, with all that being said, when things start to break down, they've got Cam Spencer and Alex Caravan that can cover up for a lot of mistakes on the perimeter, and then they've got Donovan Clingan inside that can cover up for mistakes at the rim.
If Alabama's going to have a chance in this game, and you know they're there, they're a team playing in this tournament, I would have to think that it starts for them on the defensive end of the court because they're going to have to get in transition.
Oh, absolutely. But and again, what they have an edge in this game is they've got to play through Grant Nelson as much as they can on the perimeter. Because the one thing Alabama has not done all year, it's one of the reasons that they've lost the games that they did, they can't really guard the rim. I mean, they're very, very – analytically, they're poor in rim pressure, you know, with the numbers. But the look test also says they're poor with rim pressure. And they don't do a great job of taking away your duckings. They're extremely athletic. And they're extremely well coached and they've got great guards and their bigs are agile and athletic. It's not that, but they're just not good at taking away post ups, duck ins, roles, and they're really not good at taking away the rim. And Grant Nelson's coming off his best game, but at the same time, he's not going to be able to deal with Klingon. They've got to pull Klingon out as much as possible, because the one thing UConn will do is they will go up at times and go after that pick and roll. And you're not going to be able to beat them off the ball screen in the pick and roll game if they bring Klingon up. You've got to be able to kick the ball to the next pass, to the next outlet, and then he's got to try to get the ball to the rim either on a pass or on a drive before Klingon gets back into the paint. So that'll be a bit of a matchup for everybody to watch, how UConn guards Grant Nelson, because he's going to have to make, if they have any chance to beat UConn in that game, he's going to have to make at least 3 to 4 threes, in my mind.
Tom Crane with us, took Marquette to the Final Four, former Indiana coach as well. On the other side of the bracket, you've got Zach Edey and Purdue, and you have a North Carolina State team that just doesn't want the season to end. They just keep winning and winning. Let's start with NC State. When a team like that gets hot, gets on a roll, what is going right for them?
Improvement of their role players. DJ Burns has been able to score for a while. You can go back to last year, and he can score. He's really, really smart. He's great on his feet. He's got excellent touch to go with those hands. He's got really, really wide shoulders. I get all that he could be a football player talk. You know, he's got that. And he's almost impossible to block his shot because of where he releases the ball from, because he hits you right square in your chest, right in the sternum. And so he's really good. And then the other thing, because of that quickness, he can spin off of you. Like, if you try to guard him with one leg, like if you're going to try to position yourself on him and you're going to try to, you know, put one knee into his backside, split him a little bit like that, he's killing that. I mean, he's killing that. He killed Carolina on that. He did the same thing to Duke. That's no issue for him. He can do that. But the reason they've improved is Diarra and Michael O'Connell. Diarra is covering up so much ground. He's playing off DJ Burns as well as he ever has. They throw in Danny Cannell's nephew, Ben Middlebrooks, who can defend. He's tough. He'll rebound. So they've got they've got that third big that you need. But Michael O'Connell, who was a three-year grad from Stanford and went there in the portal, was one of the great portal pickups of the year. And I thought that when they got him. And he's been good this year, been inside of this tournament, and going back to the ACC tournament, he's been great. I mean, he's playing like he's a four-year leader, like he's been there the whole time. And I think that Braden Smith matchup with Michael O'Connell is a wash. I think they're both really good. I think they're both keys to their team. And I think that's a big reason that NC State has won. But what they have, with all that being said, what they have that Purdue doesn't have is they've got DJ Horn, who I think will be a real problem for either Fletcher Lawyer or Lance Jones trying to keep off the dribble. And I think that's one of the edges that North Carolina State has in this game. And obviously Purdue's got their edges too. But I think the DJ Horn edge is a big one.
Coaches will always talk about wanting to get their teams playing well at the right time, but North Carolina State has played with its back against the wall. I think it's 8 or 9 games now. They faced elimination, and they just keep winning. What is that worth in an event like this, where you've got a team that, you know, has played almost as a wild card all the way through the tournament?
Oh, I think it's valuable. I think the confidence is incredibly valuable. I think they're not going to get rattled. I think the key in a game like Purdue is you better not start whining about the officiating, the 3 seconds, or Zach having his elbows in your face, because he can't help it. He's 7'4", right? I mean, those elbows are going to be up. Now, he knows how to use them, don't get me wrong, and Matt's a great teacher. But like, Zach Edey's elbows, he's a 7'4 guy, so, like, deal with it. And the other thing is going to be, I think, the advantage that they have with the confidence of being through it, that, like, if you think you're going to play drop coverage like Gonzaga did and like some other people did against Purdue, and you think you're going to be able to do that and not keep a body on Edey or not swipe at him when he's got the ball in the post or not try to get into his legs every chance that you get, you're not winning. Zach Edey is too smart. He's not only too good, he's too smart. And he's seen every coverage possible. It's the people that make it hard for him to get loose because they kept a body on him, or when they see the eyes go down, when he's into his move, they're going down there to try to attack the dribble. The people that think they're going to rotate and, you know, we're just going to get big and we're going to come to him once he gets in the paint, he chews that up. And then if you make him kick it out, he reposts or he gets in position to offensive rebound. So if you got to look at the coverage and say, we can't let Zach Edey be free. Like, he's got to feel somebody. The more we can get two people for him to feel, the better. But we better do a great job of making sure that his body is not loose, because he's so big, he's so strong, and he's so good at creating his leverage that if you let him get a head start because you came into his body late, he's just going to carve that up.
Yeah, we have seen players at this juncture of the NCAA tournament who shine. And Dwayne Wade was one of those guys for you that everybody could see it. Like, you knew it all along, but suddenly everybody could see it. Is there a player in this foursome here that you're looking at going, there's going to be, this is a coming out party, or are we already talking about it, Zach Edey and some others?
Oh, I think we are. I don't know if there's anybody that's going to be a surprise. I think the key is going to be, can the guys that have been playing well in the tournament keep that up? That's where DR and O'Connell come in. That's where, here's a name, Mason Gillis at Purdue, because you got to guard him. I mean, he's a three-point shooter. He had a game last year, I believe it was against Indiana, that he had, or it was either, I think it was Indiana or Ohio State, I don't remember exactly, but he made like 8 threes in a game. And he's a guy that when he was projected really young, he was going to be a first-round draft pick in baseball. And he decided to focus on basketball, and he's become an outstanding role player for Purdue. He's the kind of guy that you look at the end of the night, and he got 15 points, and all of a sudden America didn't really realize how good he is. Or I think for UConn, I think people know Alex Caravan is good, but I don't know if they know how good he is. And I don't think anybody should be shocked on Saturday or Monday night if they're in it, and all of a sudden the game is over, and Alex Caravan had 18 to 21 points with 5 assists. And he guarded, and he was a mainstay defensively. It's guys like that that can make a difference. I think NC State's full of those guys. For Alabama, I would say this guy has got to be really, really good if they're going to win on Saturday and have a chance to play and win on Monday, is Ryland Griffin. Aaron Estrada's a veteran. Mark Sears is really, really good. Grant Nelson, we said he's got to make some shots. Ryland Griffin's coming off a great game the other day against Clemson. He's got to be really, really good as a sophomore, because he's their best perimeter defender, and he's probably their second-best shooter behind Mark Sears.
Tom Crane with us. You can catch him on ESPN as an analyst, also on radio, and obviously coached at a high level with Georgia and Indiana and Marquette, among other stops. Coach, I saw when the game officials were announced for the Final Four, I kind of casually glanced at it, but I'm sure the coaches and both staffs and all the staffs were kind of pouring over it. How much does the officials and the officiating assignments matter in a Final Four?
Oh, it matters every night. So it definitely matters in a Final Four, because the trick is this. Like, if you probably don't want, if you're the opposing coach, you probably don't want Big Ten officials doing the Purdue game, because they become so used to how Zach Edey plays. And I have no problem with how he plays. I mean, maybe I would if I was in the league. But the bottom line is, he's 7'4". He's really, really hard to officiate. And I think with me, even during the regular season, I would go back. I would get the statistics, go back through the box scores. There were ways to do this. And I would watch the last 5-6 games that an official had done the games, because you wanted to get a feel. And I didn't do it every night, but I did it a lot of nights, especially in conference. Because you wanted to see, because they all do so many different leagues, right? So, like, the Big Ten, and anybody can say what they want, that officiating is the same every time. No, it's not. The Big 12 is different. The Pac-12 is different. Ask all these people in the Pac-12, like Eric Musselman now and Dana Altman and Danny, well, Danny Sprinkle would be different, but Dana Altman, ask them how different in a year the Big Ten officiating is going to be than it is in the Pac-12. It's just going to be. And so it just, there's no doubt about it. So you want to get a feel for what are the go-to calls of people? Who gets the advantage offensively or defensively? Who do you want to see refereeing at the basket? When somebody's underneath the rim or somebody's the side official that's looking at post play, what are they more apt to call? And we would chart that stuff. We would look at it. I would never really complain about who was calling what. I would just make sure that we had a pretty good scouting report on who would call what, right, based on the game, and not get into guys about, well, you haven't called this, you haven't called that. But we'd almost scout the officials the way that we did the other team. And I think if you're not doing that in a Final Four situation, you're not giving your team every chance to win. And anybody that says that's too much, Well, you know what? We got a lot of data right now that you can study and look at, and there's nothing wrong with looking at that either, because they're human beings too, right? And they've advanced to this place to be in the Final Four and to be in the national championship game. What are their pet calls? What are they like? What are they like in the post? What are they like up front, up top? And the rest of it, you know, how do they deal with off-ball contact? You know, those are the things. Everybody's, well, it's block charge. No, that's pretty simple in this day and age. They've kind of established how they're going to call that. But it's the other things that become personnel-driven based on the officials that you really need to look at.
I had somebody ask me the other day, they said, you know, we less frequently see 3 seconds of the key called these days. Is it because offenses now are different? Are we seeing more high pick and roll and we're the less of what, you know, Purdue is wanting to do with Zach Edey? Or what do you make of that?
I think that in traveling. Yeah, I think it's been going that way. I think there's so much going on in the paint that you're looking at who's getting advantage. Like the Big 12 is a great example. Everybody says, well, it's really physical. They let you beat each other up. No, I'm on the official side on this. They don't let you get a big advantage, right? Like it's going to be really physical. And I've coached a lot of games and I've watched a lot, especially this year, where you look at it and say, no, they're really, for the most part, if you try to take advantage of the advantage that you're being given, well, now they're going to blow the whistle on you. But they will let you go in there and they will let you go at each other. So I think that becomes, I think there's way less visual studying. And I'm not an official and I haven't really asked officials this, but I think they pay way less attention to feet than they do anything else. And I think that's why you get the 3 seconds. And I think that's why you get the travels. I think they get so caught up in making sure that they are calling what they want enforced. And I think it gets a little tighter in the NCAA tournament because you don't advance if you have too many screw-ups. But I think officiating has a really hard job. I always thought that when I was coaching, and I would complain, and I'd want to learn things, and I might get mad and all that. But I think they got a really hard job, man, because at some point they got to widen this lane for real. You know, not just an NIT as an experimental rule. We've been experimenting with it for 10 years now. At some point, people got to say, hey, we're going to make the game better. We're going to make it more free-flowing. Okay, let's make it a little bit easier and quit getting these figureheads in these rooms that think that really don't have boots on the ground, right? Because that's when all the mistakes get made, when you got people that think they know what it is, but you don't have boots on the ground that are in the room telling you what is really going on. And just open up the floor a little bit. I mean, if they can do it in Europe, and if they can do it in the pros, and they can do it in the ladies' game, I think, why can't we do it in the men's game? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Amen to that. Let's put you as commissioner of college basketball, and we'll get it changed.
Who do you like? I'd be considered one of those figureheads. I don't want any part of that.
Right. But, you know, there's nothing worse. Like, when I talk to football coaches, they talk about getting in those rules meetings, and they're looking around going, there's nobody who's coached football making a decision here. Like, we're in real trouble.
Hey, yeah, we can go back to what happened after the FBI scandal and go and look at some of those committees that were formed. And we shouldn't really be sitting here wondering why we're in the situation that we're in. Right? I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, you got to have people. And that's no knock on the people that were in the room. But at some point, you got to put people in the room that know how it's done. That you really do. I mean, it's a crazy world, and it's going to get. This is all going to get more crazy before it gets better. And, you know, until at some point, they're going to have to look at the contracts. They're going to have to look at caps inside of different leagues. I mean, the money is incredible. I mean, it's there's middle of the road Power Five point guards. They're going to get upwards of $500,000 in a car right now, at the very least, right now, because it's such a seller's market. And I know last time I was on your show, we talked about this, but it's like, it's absolutely crazy. There's no way that is sustainable. You know, it's one thing to have the money. It's another thing to be paying inordinate amounts of money for average players. But that's the market right now. And until they, and I have no trouble with people making money, but at some point, they've got to get some kind of constraints in here as to what each league has. And then if you're good enough to have an agent, if you're good enough to have, you know, a CAA or a Clutch or a WME or somebody like that representing you. And so great. Good for you. I mean, that means you're a heck of a player. But at some point, they're going to have to get control of this because it's just going to get more nuts. And it's the same thing with the rules. Put people in there that understand the game, that are in the middle of it, and get something done.
Who do you like to play in the championship game on Monday night?
I like UConn and Purdue. I think the thing with if NC State was really good at pick and roll basketball with DJ Burns, I might feel different. But they're so much of a post up team, and I think DJ Burns will be an issue. I think it's going to be a really close game between Purdue and NC State. It really could go either way in my mind, but I think it'll be Purdue, and I think it'll be Purdue and UConn on Monday night. And I just don't know if anybody's got enough over a 40-minute game. I mean, look at UConn this past Saturday. They were shooting the ball so poorly that at the end of the day, Illinois went on a 30-0 run, and they still, their perimeter shooting at times was atrocious. Like, you would look at some of UConn shooting and say there's no way they can win. But yet they wouldn't let the other team score. And Illinois is one of the fastest, most explosive, well-rounded offensive teams in the country. And they had those moments. UConn's just that good. Now, I take all that back. If Donovan Klingon, if something goes wrong where he is can't play in the game, because he changes the game more than any. Zach Edey changes the game offensively big time. Donovan Klingon changes the game so much more maybe than anybody right now defensively.
You're going to tour some colleges. You're going to be a dad while this is all going on. Are you excited about that? Because I know, you know, as a coach, you got to mentor and be a father figure for a lot of kids, but you really are a father figure for your kid.
Yeah, our two oldest went to the schools where we lived, where we were coaching at Indiana and Georgia. So it was always a little bit different. But, yeah, I've enjoyed this part of it. My wife has made a couple trips. I made most of them in the summer, but it's getting to that point now. And so I think it's like anything else. You choose a college, but you're not just choosing it. You're not just looking at the dorms and where they're going to eat. You know, obviously that's big for the kids, but you want to get a feel when you're on these campuses. And I think one of the great things, like if I went back to coaching, one of the first things that I would do is I would get myself and my staff and anybody that was going to be on the program, we would go take one of those student-led tours. And we might do it a couple times because you get around those students, and especially when they get off script a little bit and they start walking around and you start asking them questions, that's when you get a real feel for what the school is about. And I think it's you just get a vibe for it. You get a feel. It's like anything else. It's like you want people to have when they come into your program, right? Like somebody comes in and watches you practice, they should know within 20, 30 minutes if they want to be there or not. And I think to me, it's the same thing when you get on a campus. How does it feel? What's it like? How are the people? And you can't make a total judgment call, but you can base it a little bit on how you feel. And then the academic part of it kicks in there. And obviously you want that respect level for your child academically. But more importantly, you want them to be happy. You want them to be comfortable. And you want them looking forward to being in that school every day. And I think it's important to watch how your kid reacts in it.
Tom Crean, you're the best. Have a great weekend, and we'll get you back on. Love to see you coaching again.
Oh, I'll get there. I'll get there. I just got to get the right one. So I appreciate it very much, John. Anytime.
Anytime. I love it. All right, Tom Crean, there he goes. Great stuff on the Final Four, coaching, parenting. Love the stuff on officiating. Anna's coming into the studio next. What happened to the Pointer Sisters? What happened to REM? What happened? Like, you know, what happened? What happened to all these 80s and 90s bands who disappeared? She's not going to have the answers.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.